This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Joe Jordan. Joe is the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management and Budget. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger. It's great to be here.
Well, Joe, today I know we're going to have a wide-ranging discussion of procurement policy issues, what's going on, and what your priorities are and the administration's priorities for the procurement system.
Great.
But first, I'd be remiss as a fellow New Englander and a long-time Patriots fan. I'd be remiss if we didn't at least commiserate about the game. Well, that was horrible, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yes. Blown opportunities. Mm-hmm. I thought I was over it, and then I saw a Jay Leno joke last night that the president referenced the Patriots of 1776 in his inaugural address, and if only the Patriots of last Sunday had done quite as well. And I realized I am not over it.
Nah, well, yeah, neither am I, and neither are my boys. They're still in mourning for another wrong end of the season, right?
Yes.
And it's been frustrating, but oh well. So I don't know what I'm going to do with regard to the Super Bowl, whether I even watch it or not. It might be too painful. So, but now let's get to the business at hand.
Yes.
So, and first of all, you bring both private sector experience to your position as well as experience working for the Small Business Administration, and I'd like you to give a little folks listening a little bit about your background and what you did prior to becoming Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy.
Absolutely, Roger. Like you said, I spent most of my career in the private sector, working for some small businesses, working for a consulting firm, most recently before joining the government. There, I worked on a number of purchasing and supply chain management issues for businesses, large and small, state governments, and even some professional sports leagues. And I was asked by Karen Mills when she joined the SBA to come down and run small business contracting there. There had been some challenges in that office and meeting the government-wide goal. And it just seemed like a great time to serve. I have a passion for the subject matter, and I jumped aboard. And then when Dan Gordon announced that he was leaving after an impressive and distinguished tenure as OFPP administrator, the president and Jeff Zients asked me to come over and fill Dan's shoes as best I could for a while, and the Senate saw fit to confirm me. So here I am, really enjoying my job as administrator.
You mentioned doing some, I guess, logistics for professional sports teams. Like, I mean, it's too bad you couldn't find another cornerback for the Patriots.
Yes,
I know.
Yes.
But
we won't be strategically sourcing wide receivers in the offseason,
no.
I assure you.
with regard to I'd like to just spend a moment talking about your private sector experience. And you did did work in helping develop, procurement strategies for companies and logistics, that kind of thing. So what did you see in doing that you thought really worked, that, best commercial practices? Kind
sure.
Of thing?
There were a few things when I was at McKinsey that I think have really informed the way that I've approached both my job at SBA and then now as administrator at OFPP, and that's the importance of data-driven, fact-based analytics in coming up with any strategy or plan of attack. In this town, you get a lot of I hear, I think, I feel, but if you can get beyond that and engage on a fact-based, a data set that everyone's agreed upon, you can really come to some consensus and make some good change. Secondly, as a consultant, you get pretty good at pattern recognition, so you don't need to be a 30-year expert in one particular field to start to see patterns emerge and work collaboratively to come up with solutions to address any challenges or issues in the various parts of the procurement community. And then lastly, in the procurement engagements that I did specifically, one of the things that I thought was important and saw as a value driver there, which I've brought to my approach to OFPP, is the importance of decentralized needs identification, you know, so the people on the front lines know what they need to get their job done, but then some centralized structure around how you go out and acquire that in the best way to drive total cost of ownership down and value up.
Those are the kind of things I think, you know, with our budget, you know, challenges that we're facing, that the procurement system needs to think about, like how to deliver, you know, more efficient, effective, best value for customer agencies and ultimately the taxpayer.
Yes.
Now, yeah, did you, like, I just know my personal experience, you know, I came to Washington, you know, in the dark ages and, you know, and I got a job, you know, working at GSA, and that's how I learned about procurement. And then I just fell in love with it and enjoy it because it touches every agency mission fundamentally.
Absolutely.
How did you, you know, was it, you know, your work at McKinsey that, you know, got you interested in it?
So it was a combination of factors. Definitely my work at McKinsey helped me realize just how important procurement and supply chain management is to any organization of any scale.
Absolutely.
That's true across the board. It's not unique to government. But what is unique to government, what made me so excited for procurement specifically, is that it's where all the money gets spent. I mean, one out of every $6 the government spends goes out through a government contract. We're talking about more than $500 billion every year. I mean, that's real money even in this town. And, you know, it's a place where there were and are certainly opportunities for improvement. So if there's an area where the pie is so big that any incremental improvement has huge positive benefits for the taxpayer, the agencies, missions, et cetera. That's a place I wanted to be. And I felt and feel very passionately about the small business aspect of the mission, why I loved my job at SBA. But now kind of overseeing the policies and procedures for the entire pie, I really enjoy working collaboratively with the entire community, both government and our great vendors, to come up with the win-wins that will increase value for the taxpayer. Again, we don't need to make, you know, monumental leaps to have monumental impact.
Absolutely. And, you know, Joe, can you talk a little bit about the role of the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy and the Office of Federal Procurement Policy in our system?
Absolutely. So the Office of Federal Procurement Policy is within the Office of Management and Budget and was created in the mid-70s to have a centralized place to oversee the policies, the regulations, the workforce, the data that governs all of our acquisition ecosystem. And so while I don't award any contracts, I do work with all of the federal agencies that are awarding those $500 billion I referred to earlier, and making sure that they're doing so in a consistent, smart way, in accordance with the Federal Acquisition Regulation, a delightful book that runs 53 chapters and 2,300 pages, but is really the backbone of what we're trying to do to create an open, transparent, fair, and competitive environment so that agencies can get what they need to fulfill their missions at the lowest possible cost and the highest value to the taxpayer.
And now let's turn to a little bit, you know, given that that's your role, can you talk, you know, now we're past, as Dan Tangelini likes to say, the constitutional moment of last fall, right? So, and with the, you know, the administration now set for another 4 years, you know, what are the administration's priorities for the procurement system? And that's going to be, you know, the focus of this in our next couple segments.
Sure. So I would put my priorities and the administration's priorities in terms of procurement policy into three buckets. The first is buying smarter. And what do I mean by that? Well, there are a bunch of subcomponents, but I would point to things like strategic sourcing, which you and I and other folks in the communities have talked a bunch about since I've been confirmed, and the increased use of data in making smart decisions and creating those win-wins for the contractor and the agency as we go out and procure things like prices paid and getting better information there, past performance, but doing so in a collaborative way. Secondly, building the right supplier relationships. What do I mean here? Well, there's a real positive component around increasing our utilization of small businesses, continuing our increased push to make sure agencies are reaching out to find those innovative entrepreneurs who may not previously have been part of our procurement mix. And then also an oversight component, making sure that we're continuing to drive any fraud, waste, and abuse out of the system. Again, not a witch hunt, but rather something we do in collaboration with the great businesses out there who know that a procurement system free of any of those bad actors benefits everyone. And lastly, for priorities, it's developing the acquisition workforce. Now, the slight change here is when I talk about the acquisition workforce, I'm not only talking about our tremendous 1102 series contracting officers, the 36,000 or so folks who are awarding contracts every day. I'm also referring to the folks who are doing acquisition planning up front in the program offices, those program and project managers, and the folks doing contract administration on the back end, the contracting officers representatives. Now, by expanding the definition, it adds significantly more folks into the acquisition workforce tent.
Absolutely.
That provides a great opportunity, but also a great challenge. And just to quickly put some numbers on that, you know, you look at the Department of Defense, our biggest contracting agency. They have about 24,000 contracting officers. It's a healthy number, and we need to make sure they have the right folks with the right skills and the right training. But when you expand that definition to include those program folks and the contracting officer representatives, now you're at about 152,000 people. Again, if we get these
huge multiplier,
if we get these folks the right training and the right information, we can have much better outcomes. But doing that in these resource challenged times requires a lot of thought and partnership, and that's why it's such an exciting challenge.
Right. And when speaking of resources, we do have to take a break right now, Joe. But when we come back, we'll be talking more with Joe Jordan. Joe is the administrator for federal procurement policy at the Office of Management Budget, and we'll continue discussing the administration's priorities for our procurement system. Perfect. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are talking to Joe Jordan. Joe is the administrator for federal procurement policy at the Office of Management Budget. And Joe, when we took the break, the first break, you were talking about, you know, the acquisition workforce is really, you know, those program managers who help define requirements. It's a much bigger cross section. And you know, that thought is consistent with one of the things that, and I know the report goes back to 2007, but the Sarah Panel report talked about in looking at commercial best practices, talked about the investment that companies, commercial entities put in their procurement and put, you know, their senior managers on the team, you know, because they understand the importance of it in terms of their logistics, how they operate, you know, making sure they're efficient. What you're talking about sounds like a lot of the same consistent theme. I'd just like to get your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I think that, you know, it's critically important that people understand that acquisition is not an ancillary function. It is core to agencies successfully fulfilling their missions. And so that means making sure that senior folks are part of the contract planning process. And we have a good, robust contract planning process. Mm-hmm. That contract award does happen by all the rules, but that we're maximizing our outreach and casting as wide a net as possible so we get good competition and good value. And then during contract administration, you know, a lot of these contracts are the base plus four, the five-year contracts,
mm-hmm.
that we're working with those contractors, those vendors, to make sure that the agencies are getting what they need and the vendors are, you know, feeling good about what they're providing, and having that two-way collaboration is very important. I think one example of this and the Sarah recommendation that you talk about is something that Steve Van Roekel, the CIO, and I have been working a lot on, and that's partnering with agencies to make sure they're creating investment review boards. You know, IT acquisition is about an $80 billion industry, and making sure that those senior managers are reviewing these acquisitions up front so that they're being smart about how they allocate their agency dollars, those mission dollars, in the best possible way is very important.
That's definitely, you know, something that I think is a great step in terms of, you know, the idea of investment review boards and figuring out it, because fundamentally it does get back to requirements.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another thing Sarah Panel sort of focused on, is that the better requirements, the better defined, the clearer are, the better competition you get, the better outcomes you get as a customer and as a contractor. Again, going back to your thought about a win-win, you know, if you can address that requirements phase, that's good for the taxpayer fundamentally. And that goes to buying smarter, and I just wanted to go there, and we can talk a little bit about, you know, what you're looking at. You mentioned strategic sourcing, and mm-hmm. I know Jeffrey Zients, the Deputy Director for Management at OMB, you know, issued a December 5th memo regarding essentially taking strategic sourcing, I would say, to the next level,
yes,
so to speak. Can you talk about what that memo entails?
Sure. I think you synthesized it well, where the goal of OMB and Jeff's memo was to take strategic sourcing to the next level. We had received recommendations from the President's Management Advisory Board, a group of private sector CEOs who engage on a few critical management topics each year, and they had given us a set of recommendations around how to really add some fuel to the fire on our strategic sourcing efforts. It's something that I saw over and over again work in the private sector when done well. To be clear, strategic sourcing is not bundling. It is, as it sounds, being strategic in the way that we acquire our goods and services. So it's really a commodity and a category management procedure. So we put out a memo that did a few things. It ensures that each agency has a senior accountable official who oversees strategic sourcing there. It created a new body, the Strategic Sourcing Leadership Council, the SSLC. And that's comprised of the seven largest agencies who collectively spend about 90% of the acquisition dollars. Also has the SBA as a member, because we need to keep small businesses front of mind when we do these types of things. And has a few other experts, so that it's not a blue ribbon panel. What it is it's a decision-making body, so that we can figure out, are there vehicles out there that already work in these categories? Are there best practices we should grab onto? Do we need to stand up new vehicles and make recommendations to that SSLC, so they will commit their spend in ways and through vehicles that will maximize the leverage that we have as the government? You know, we are the U.S. government is the largest buyer of goods and services in the world. But for far too long, we've acted as if we're 300 different mid-sized businesses when we deal with various contractors. So we need to partner with those contractors to reduce some of the administrative costs on their end for having, you know, too much duplication in the contracting world. So I think there's a win there for our vendors, but also to plow a lot of those savings into reduced pricing and reduced costs for the agencies.
Yes, it's interesting, and I just want to talk a little bit about how the Leadership Council is going to work, and just in terms of, because there's it is strategic sort of acquisition, strategic sourcing, and I can see, you know, in making the business decisions, there'll be commodities or items that are, you know, better done across government as an enterprise versus things that are done, you know, by an individual agency with regard to, you know, their requirements. And, sure, you know, is that something that the council is going to be looking at as to, you know, how that should be managed, and that strategic sourcing accountable official is playing that role as a intermediary?
Absolutely. And one of the key things about the council is that it's comprised not just of acquisition folks, but of CFOs, CIOs, folks who run just assistant secretary of management types at the agencies. Because we need them to commit the spend to these vehicles and to these processes that they say are going to drive the most value and exemplify the best practices. And so that's not done with just one silo. That's done with a cross-section of all of the CXO functions at a given agency. Yes, we will move up the value chain from commodities that really can be purchased across the entire government. Office supplies, one of the more mature strategic sourcing vehicles, is a good example of that, up to more mission-specific areas where it won't be 26 or even the seven SLC agencies who are coming together, but maybe a few, or an individual agency that right now has a fragmented spend with a set of different contracts, even possibly with the same vendor within its agency, and making sure that it's putting all that spend under management, and people are asking the question, hey, why do we have different terms for the same product or service with the same vendor at the same agency? Yeah. So that, you know, that data gathering, that first step, I think will pay enormous dividends in and of itself.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue that you just touched on, the idea that there's multiple contracts just within agencies for the same stuff, and, you know, with differing terms and conditions, and different contract periods, and all kinds of different things going on. And that's, I think there's a great opportunity there to better manage that at that agency level.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about GSA's role? And, you know, because I know GSA is called out in the memo,
yes,
specifically as well.
You know, GSA has a real leadership role to play with strategic sourcing, as they do with anything in our acquisition ecosystem. I've enjoyed a great relationship with Acting Administrator Tangerini and all the folks at FAS, and I'm excited to continue that going forward. With strategic sourcing specifically, you know, they have a great set of schedules and other BPAs that agencies can use to get goods and services. And so we want to make sure that they had an ability to, where we're saying we want some more leverage and volume guarantees and things of that nature, that they had a chance to stand up some of those vehicles in commodity areas that made the most sense. So while the SSLC, the overall council entity, is charged with setting up 5 to 10 vehicles, GSA mm-hmm. itself is charged with doing the same. And you know, really takes a clear leadership role in being the government's buyer in those areas where it makes the most sense. Also, they're partnering with my office and the SSLC to create a prices paid portal. You know, it'll be within the government because there are some competitive issues right now about making that open to everyone. Right. But we got to understand how much is everyone paying for the same goods and services. You know, one of the biggest surprises to me as I entered this role was I can't get information on everybody buys laptops. How much are we paying per laptop? What are the terms and conditions that might cause price variances? Yeah, any of those types of things. We got to get a handle on that, because anytime there's an information asymmetry where the contract knows exactly how much they're charging all their various customers, but the customers have no idea how much each other are paying, you're going to mm-hmm. lose. That's bargaining negotiating 101. And so we need to partner with the vendors to make sure that everyone has the same information, and then we're arriving at smart conclusions.
Yeah, I think it's important that you know, in doing that portal, because you're right on point in terms of there's prices paid, but they're also, you know, there's reasons for those prices being potentially different.
Sure.
Whether it's different terms and conditions and one agency's doing it one way and they've got one set of terms versus another agency that maybe does a commercial item acquisition, there's less terms, so the price is lower, theoretically.
Yes.
One of the things that, and then we're already hard up on the break there, Joe. So, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about strategic sourcing and get your views on, you know, the role of industry and the communication, and just a little bit about, you know, your take on Mythbusters, as, you know, with, you know, that you're responsible for that as well. So when we come back, we'll be talking more with Joe Jordan. Joe is the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management Budget, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Joe Jordan. Joe is the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management Budget. And Joe, you know what? Yours is not as bad as some of the government folks that I've had talking. I've had to gone on for about 5 minutes describing their position. So that's good.
Hey, you know, I'm one of the people who, I came from being Associate Administrator for Government Contracting and Business Development at the United States Small Business Administration. So,
that was
a mouthful.
Yeah, that's a great example, actually. It's a very good example. When we took the break, we were talking about strategic sourcing and what was going on there. And you've talked a lot about data collection, and that's one of the areas that, you know, I'd like to, you know, touch on further and just get your perception of, you know, one of the concerns or the issues that folks talk about is, you know, the cost of collecting the data and what is the data used for. And I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk about the data. I mean, I am a full-on data nerd. I, you know, worked as a consultant and spent some time getting my MBA, and I'm a firm believer that fact-based, data-driven analysis is how you arrive at the best answers. Now, you're absolutely right that industry often says, hey, there's a cost to providing data. What are we getting out of it? And that's where, you talk about my efforts to reduce duplication and standardize some of these terms and reporting requirements so that there is something in it for the contractor in that administrative burden reduction. But then also, they want to see that we're using this data. You know, sometimes it feels like a contractor gives the government a whole set of data and the government puts it in the same warehouse with Indiana Jones's Ark, you know, and never to be seen again. That's not how we're going to operate, or not how we operate now, not how we're going to operate going forward. We really will double down on the efforts we've already taken to analyze a whole host of this data that we get, be thoughtful about any incremental data elements that we ask for or things that we can stop asking for, and focus on the pieces of information that really help us drive better decisions. So that's why when I talked about the prices paid information, it really is important to get some transparency within the government, but that'll lead to efficiencies both for the government and for the contractors, and we can create the win-win. Now, the use of data overall is a very hot topic. You know, the e-government office and Steve Van Roekel's team are working on all sorts of big data challenges and policies there. And we're partnering with them in terms of the procurement world to make sure that the collection, the utilization, and then the display of any data elements is value added to the system.
Yeah, that's great. That's some great feedback there, which sort of turns to the next topic I wanted to talk a little bit about, and that is just the, you know, the MythBusters mm-hmm. initiative that has come out of your office, and now you're sort of responsible for, obviously, and just get your thoughts on, you know, the importance of communication with industry and how you, you know, if you have specific plans or thoughts about how you're going to move forward in that.
Yes, yeah, so there was MythBusters 1 that came out when Dan Gordon was administrator. Was incredibly helpful in doing just what it says, dispelling some of the myths, not realities, about the way that agencies and contractors can talk and interact and engage with each other, especially pre-award. Then, shortly after Dan left, before I was confirmed, OFP issued a second MythBusters campaign and fact sheet. And so now as we look forward, I think there are two prongs to it because I love this idea. I love the spirit of it and I love the actuality of the product. So one, I need to increase the uptake of all of those best practices that are already contained in previously issued MythBusters, making sure agencies and vendors understand what was contained in those guidance documents and are acting on those. And then secondly, look at what do we need to do or what can we do to advance the cause in a MythBusters 3. I'm very open to doing that. And I've had some great conversations with industry along the way. Again, I mean, Roger, one of the things that I felt strongly when I was at SBA and I feel just as strongly about now is that if we're going to have real transformational change and improvement in our acquisition system, it's going to be done collaboratively, not in an adversarial manner with industry. So when I was at SBA, you didn't hear me saying large businesses were bad. No, not at all. They were critical partners in the supply chain for small businesses who subcontract there and all those types of things.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and just like now, you know, we need to do these things collaboratively. Agencies and industry need to talk. That is how you're going to get the best outcomes. I understand the fear of protests and lawsuits and all these types of things. Trust me, I've testified in front of Congress 13 times, and none of those were for them to tell me what a great job I was doing in that particular role or in that particular effort. But as long as you're operating under smart principles and playing by the rules and following the law, there's a ton that you can do. One of my favorite quotes that Dan ever said when he was administrator was, in light of this MythBusters campaign, I don't care if an agency feels it needs to have its entire general counsel's office in the room. You can talk to vendors or potential vendors, mm-hmm. and we need to do more of that so we end up with the right acquisition terms.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, it's funny you mentioned, you know, protests. Is that I did that both in the government and then the private sector. You know, litigated those, and I can tell you, oftentimes, it was a lack of communication. Yes. That led to the protest or led companies to feel that the only way they could really figure out what would happen was, you know, to, you know, actually pursue, you know, the remedies through GAO or the courts.
And let me just talk about that for one side, because that touches on a really important point about some of the appropriate level of risk taking that contracting officers should have and some of the risk aversion that a lot of people feel is in the system. And I understand the contracting officer's mindset and this oversight culture. But it says, you know, I joked about the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulation, earlier. And yes, it's a giant 2,300-page book. In the very first part, it says, if we have not forbidden it, expressly forbidden it in this book, and it complies with sound business judgment, you can do it. You may do it. I mean, I haven't talked to all 36,000 contracting officers. I've talked to quite a few. I don't know too many that feel that's the marching order. That's the way,
right.
The operating
You're
mindset.
Right.
It's if you haven't told me exactly how to do it in this book, I probably shouldn't, because GAO or the IG or someone's going to yell at me. We got to get past that and open up a more innovative mindset and do that culture shift.
Right. And I think, you know, I'm just going to put it on you. It's like, I think you are absolutely right on that. and there's an opportunity there. And that just the talking about it is just a great thing. And it, because I do believe, and I worked in the government for 20 years, and I can tell you some of the most exciting times and things that got done was in in the like from 92 to 2000.
Mm-hmm.
There was reinventing government, National Performance Review, all kinds of things to try to get people the idea of let's figure out better ways to do it, take risks. And I think. We can't afford not to think of it that way as a community, as a government, given, what we're going to, the fiscal, issues we're facing.
Absolutely agree.
I wanted to ask you this and just get your thoughts and, the characteristics of a good strategic sourcing vehicle. Can you, I think you've sort of touched on them all, and that's just like tidy them up in a big package.
Yeah, absolutely. and for folks who are driving and really want to look at this, we have some of these outlined in the memo that we put out. You can just go to Google or your search engine of choice and type in OMB Strategic Sourcing Memo. But
that's very good, your search engine of choice.
Yes, I'm not endorsing any particular search engine. But essentially, how would I synthesize the principles of good strategic sourcing efforts? One, you understand the current state of play. How much are we spending? What are we buying? And who's buying it from whom? And you get that upfront. Then after looking at that demand and vendor and spend fragmentation, you start to look at how you can leverage the total spend in a better way, which might mean reducing vendors, which might mean just reducing the number of contracts with the same vendors you have. It's just bringing those commodity management and category management principles to bear here. And then once you've got the right set of contracts with the right vendors and the right terms, you move to demand management. That's where you look inside your agency and you say, hey, stop overnight shipping things from DC to Richmond. It goes on the same truck that two-day shipping goes in. There is no flight down to Richmond that they're putting this parcel on. So stop paying 3, 6, 12X what you can to get the same level of service. And that's up to the agencies to, really utilize those contracts in the best possible way.
Yeah, that's what they need to understand, like you said, the market, what the terms are, and what the service really is to get a better deal, right?
Yes, and it's a continuous improvement process. It's not a one-and-done fire and forget. You've got to keep on this, and it's hard work, but it's something that really does pay off.
Yeah, and we got to pay the bills, so we do have to take our next breaks. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Joe Jordan, the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management Budget, and we'll talk a little about small business initiatives and what's going on there. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Joe Jordan. Joe is the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management Budget. And Joe, when we took the break, we're just going to get talking about small business. So I'm just going to say, Joe, let's talk about small business.
Well, it's obviously one of my favorite topics, Roger. One of the proudest professional accomplishments I've had is while I was at the SBA, we had the largest increase in our small business utilization over a three-year period, really ever. And so I remain in this role just as committed to increasing our utilization of small business as I ever have been. Now, this year has posed some significant and unique challenges given the budgetary uncertainties in agencies not being sure what or when they can spend certain dollars. And so I've been going around along with SBA Administrator Karen Mills to talk to agencies and senior folks in those agencies to say, we understand, and I'm very sympathetic to the plight that agencies are in with these budgetary uncertainties, but we've got to keep those small businesses front of mind and think about the things we can do now to make sure that when the dollars are going out the door, especially in those third and fourth quarter periods, we're getting as many of those dollars in the hands of small businesses as possible. So the very first memo I issued after getting confirmed as administrator was something I co-signed with Karen Mills around small business utilization and looking at specific things like awarding contracts below the simplified acquisition threshold, utilizing the new set-aside authority on multiple award contracts, including GSA schedules, and then making sure that their senior officials within the various agencies had small business results in their performance plans. And so, we're looking at specific actionable tactical items that can help move the needle, but there's no doubt this is a really challenging year on that front.
Yeah, and, in that regard, can you have you gotten any data yet on what's going on with the schedules? My understanding is that there's been a big uptick in the number of you know, set-asides that are done through the GSA schedules.
It's still early because such a large portion of small business contracts go out towards the end of the fiscal year.
Sure.
That while I track year over year right now, we've only been doing that kind of over the last few years. So there's still some noise in the data, and I want to withhold till we get a little bit closer to the end of the year. But you're absolutely right. I feel very, very pleased with the fact that agencies seem to be aware of their set-aside authorities and utilizing them, that the confusion of can I set aside for small business or socioeconomic group via the scheduler or another GWAC or multiple work contract is gone. Yes, you can, and they all know that. But we still need to utilize that in a little bit greater numbers.
Sure. Let's talk a little acquisition workforce. And, you know, that's part of your responsibility. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, program managers and folks that are really part of the acquisition workforce, that you know, use that example of DOD of 24,000 COs versus 150,000 folks who are really involved. So what are you doing in that front, or what is the administration's focus?
Absolutely. So I would kind of divide my acquisition workforce focus into three areas, recruit, train, and retain. So on the recruitment end, we're really making a big push to reach out to folks who may not have government contracting on their career path radar, but making the case for if you want to serve, if you want to make a difference in government, why wouldn't you join the acquisition workforce? I mean, we are the ones who are awarding one out of every $6, $500 billion. And if we can do that better, there's almost nowhere else in government you can have the same level of impact. So, you know, in the whole go where the money is philosophy, if you want to make a difference, joining the acquisition workforce is a great way to do it. And I'm going to go all around the country when I can to kind of prophesize and spread that message.
Well, you know, I'm with you on that because, you know, I as mentioned earlier, you know, just the idea of what acquisition professionals touch in terms of agency mission, you know, whether it's DOD and supporting the warfighter or the FBI and their fingerprint identification systems to, you know, Department of State, you know, just NIH, you know, the procurement system fundamentally supports all those agency missions. And it's actually pretty exciting.
Major weapon systems, vaccines. Yeah. You know, it's not just about the kind of pens and paper and office furniture, although those are really important because we can drive some value there too. But, you know, there's just incredible amount of impact that you can have as a contracting officer or an acquisition professional. Now, around the training, I've gone down to Fort Belvoir and met with the senior leadership of the Defense Acquisition University and the Federal Acquisition Institute together. So that was not just is it great to interact with them and meet with them, but to do it together so that we're reinforcing that DAU and FAI, the two main training institutions, although there are a few other great ones, are working together to drive the right training that's aligned with our priorities and most importantly aligned with the outcomes we want to see. Because when you do this type of training investment, you don't always see the payoff the next day. It's right down the road. You're creating this this higher bar for contracting officers, and we want to make sure we're instilling in them the right mindset and training, but we're also measuring the outcomes so that we can course correct as necessary. And then lastly, around retention, you know, there's a real issue in our acquisition workforce where you've got a bunch of folks who are nearing retirement age, not a whole bunch of people in the middle kind of tranche, and then some newer folks. And you talk to people at agencies and they say, you know, I want a 15-year contracting officer. Well, you can't just mint that. You know, there are some, but you're not going to create a new one overnight. So let's work with what we have. Make sure that we are not letting anyone walk out the door after 30 years as an acquisition professional without squeezing every last drop of knowledge out of them so that we can pass it on to, you know, in good succession.
Yeah, 15-year people, like they one agency will take them from the other.
Yes.
And then, yeah, that's what happens, right?
And the thing is, you know, people say, Joe, is that a problem? I say no. In a healthy ecosystem, I want acquisition professionals to feel like, hey, I might go to another agency. Yeah. I might go to the private sector. You know, I have so many potential exits. That makes it more attractive. The problem is you need a really robust inflow pipe of new folks constantly replenishing to make that continuum work. And that's not what we had for a while. You know, over the last few years, we've tried to correct some of the issues around the declining numbers in our acquisition workforce.
Absolutely.
But we're kind of bearing some of the pain for decisions that were made in the past in cutting the numbers of our acquisition workforce. Okay, you know, I'm a solution, not a problem guy. So given that state of affairs, again, we need to make sure we've got a robust inflow of new folks, good training for the folks that we do have, and then good retention for the more senior people and for the people who are leaving for other opportunities. We're making sure we're getting downloads of all of their great knowledge.
Right. Yeah, that's good stuff. We're getting close to the end here. Got about a couple minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about contract duplication.
Yes.
I mean, you've touched on it in the conversation a little bit. I know the business case memo that Dan had issued back a couple years ago, and that requirement. Are there other things you're doing there? Or I know you're talking about it. But
yeah. Yes. I think that one, it's making sure that the entire acquisition community, the agencies and OMB are utilizing the tactical steps that were outlined in that memo and abiding by the core principles that memo was driving at. It envisioned iterations over time. So it started $250 million, moved down to $100 million, where we are now. Next year it goes to $50 million in terms of the benchmark above which you would need to do a business case. And so, we're still in the anticipated learning process. But even then, I think that you could see in the future some follow-up conversation and potential guidance from me saying, we've had some key learnings. Let's course correct or update in a few areas to really make this not a burden or an unnecessary burden, but a robust tool to prevent any potential duplication and highlight the great contracts that are out there. Getting a good interagency contracts directory up and running so people know to check there first. Don't reinvent the wheel. There's always going to be, a good conversation around, do you need to build it here in terms of having that control over the contract?
Mm-hmm.
But we can be in a really good solution space if everybody understands what contracts are out there and there's a process to review and evaluate those business cases that each agency submits.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, continuing that effort, I think, is going to be vitally important. One of the things that I'm sure you've heard it, that I hear all the time, is that there's too many contracts for the same services or same products, and that costs industry money. Who ultimately pays? I mean, in reality, the taxpayer ultimately pays for that.
That's right.
Additional overhead, it's additional bid and proposal costs, all those kind of things. I think there's definitely a great opportunity there to address that issue moving forward. And if it's part of that idea of strategic acquisition from our perspective.
Absolutely.
So you got about a minute left, Joe. I just want to open up. If there's something we missed in the show that I failed to ask you about, I'll put you on the spot. Anything you want to leave with?
Roger, I think we've covered quite a bit of ground, despite the fact that it went so quickly. But I think I will
have you back.
I appreciate it, and I will accept that kind invitation. I think if there was anything I want to leave folks with, it's, we have made tremendous progress in increasing competition, lowering costs of contract. We've had historic decreases in the levels of contracting dollars going out the door and big increases in the level of competition and reductions in high-risk contracting. These are all good things. We are building upon those, though, in some really big ways. We're not resting on our laurels. That's where you see the strategic sourcing, the small business guidance, looking at how do we bring as much spend as possible under management so we buy smarter, in some places buy less. We build those good supplier relationships with the wonderful vendors who support our agency missions, and we develop our acquisition workforce so that we can drive tremendous outcomes for the taxpayer. At the end of the day, I say this all the time, it is not the agency's money. It is the taxpayer's money. And every single dollar that goes out the door, contracting officers and agencies should be thinking, is this a good expenditure of a taxpayer dollar?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And Joe, I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank my guest, Joe Jordan, the Administrator for Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Managed Budget. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.